This is Athens News Matters from WUGA. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Once again, the Clark County School District is back in the news, here to talk about a new round of ethics complaints, this time against board members, as well as the rest of the week in news and politics is our panel of commentators, Blake Odd from Flagpole Magazine, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald. It's been a busy couple of weeks since we last had you guys in, so let's go right to our biggest story, more dysfunction in the Clark County School District. Blake, let's start with you, because you dug into this mess with a long piece this week.
Oh, you had to call on me, thanks.
Yes. A few months ago, some unnamed citizens working through an attorney, Patrick McKee, filed an ethics complaint against Superintendent Damon Means. Now, a new, also anonymous, complaint has been filed against some, again, unnamed members of the school board. So what's the nature of these new allegations?
Well, there's some sentiment that perhaps this latest complaint against the unnamed board members is in response to the ethics complaint against the superintendent that you referenced, but technically they are unrelated to each other. This latest complaint is to Cognia, which used to be known as Advanced Ed, which previous to that was known as SACS, the Southern Association of Schools and Colleges, which is the organization that accredits K-12 schools and colleges and universities in the Southeast. So this is a big deal. They will come in and they will investigate these allegations, and if they are found to be true, the potential penalties could include the loss of accreditation, which would mean that graduates of the school district, their diplomas would be really not even worth the paper that they're printed on. It's not a pretty situation. This happened in Clayton County about 10 years ago, and that county is still trying to recover. The repercussions would go beyond even the school district into it could impede our growth. It could prevent us from drawing new businesses. It could hurt the economy. There are lots of potential. Now, you know, this is the kind of the nuclear option. I'm not saying that all of this is going to happen, but that's the worst case scenario.
Hefty price to pay.
Right. And what the allegations suggest is that some of the board members, we don't really know who, but we have some clues, are attempting to micromanage and keep the superintendent from doing his job. And although we don't have a lot of details about this complaint, I did trace it back. There is a connection to another complaint that was almost filed in April by the superintendent. He had a meeting with one of the board members, John Knox, where Damon Means, the superintendent, claims that Dr. Knox basically tried to browbeat him into not firing a principal in his district on the east side. I don't know which school the name of the principal was redacted, but Dr. Means dashed off a message to Advanced Ed inquiring about how to file a complaint and forwarded some materials to them at that point back in April. A couple months later, I guess, decided that he wasn't going to follow through with that, but that is part of the evidence that Advanced Ed is going to be looking at whenever they come in and investigate, which could be as soon as 30 days. At the school board meeting last week, it was very contentious. The board was divided 5-4, but they are hiring their own legal counsel. They are not using the district's legal counsel in this matter. Apparently, they're going to be formulating their own response separate from the superintendent's to the Advanced Ed complaint. So there's been a real breakdown, and this has been brewing for some time, but there's been a real breakdown between not only among board members, but in the relationship between the board and the superintendent.
I don't see any good outcome of this. And as Lakeisha Gant, the board chairman, well, she didn't say exactly this, but where are the children in all this? That's who is going to be suffering the most.
That's right. Our whole community is going to be scarred by this contention between personalities in some cases and longstanding questions, really, about what school boards, what rights they have, what responsibilities. But even if they are boards, then they should be responsible for policy and setting accountability for the implementation of those policies. And it really upsets me that public schools would be hurt in this manner by this kind of, I really believe this is very personality based.
Are you guys hearing anything about parents losing confidence in the board?
Not particularly, but how can it be anything but that?
Well, I think, I don't know if they are losing confidence in the board. I don't know if it's targeted. I just think it's a general concern and worry about whether or not, one, like Blake said, any kind of credentials are going to be questioned that come out of the school system. But most of all, whether or not we are going to be able to move out of this, whether people are not creating a situation in which it cannot be resolved except for either means leaving or the board being changed in some way. Yeah.
I feel sorry for a lot of the board members because I think most of them actually just walked into a situation that was already developing.
Mm-hmm.
We have five new board members in
this
the past
year.
9 months.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are dropped right in the middle of this.
How did the vote you said was 5-4? How did that show up with new and old board members?
Divided.
Okay. There's no real clear kind of breakdown.
Lakeisha Gant and
Kara Dykeman, Linda Davis, and Charles Worthy were the four who voted not to hire their own lawyer.
Veterans, and the other two are two of the newcomers.
Right.
Okay.
So the complaints filed against Superintendent Means this spring were on behalf of an unnamed group of citizens and taxpayers. And the recent complaints against the members of the school board were also basically anonymous.
But they're not really anonymous, the second one, I think. It's just that we don't know who it was.
Advance Ed hasn't told us, but we don't know if the complaint was made to Advance Ed anonymously. They
right.
just haven't made public the names of whoever filed it.
So it may not be anonymous, but if so, why are people so unwilling to own their criticisms?
It's an extremely sensitive topic, and it's kind of fraught with all of these racial issues that are very difficult to talk about, and I think that's the main reason why people don't really want to come forward and put their cards on the table.
Race is always uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mm-hmm. just...
And I think it's part of the internet psychology that our whole society has, that you can send out an initial email that has all this information that may or may not be accurate, and then 20 threads later, you know, it gets larger and larger, and people jump in at a point and don't really know the whole thing, and they get more and more worried instead of informed.
One really sad thing to me is that Means has posed these ideas, which are really good ideas, such as school-based health clinics, after-school care, and other measures that are designed to...
Parent literacy.
To reduce the racial inequity in achievement we see in our schools, which should be, as he has said, pretty disturbing. I mean, things like, well, there's a big gap between the achievements of African-American and white students. And some of the places where that gap has been greatest has been places like Chase Street Elementary School, which is the star of our school system, perhaps, and it's the only school with a majority white enrollment.
Right. I feel like Means, he vocalizes goals that I can't believe our community does not support. We, our community, wants to address our poverty problems and recognizes the value of children getting the full opportunity of education. I think that he has gotten caught up into creating a contentious groups and by creating his own ally group, et cetera. We're playing more and more into us, them, rather than, as Lakeisha said, our children.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned poverty, because one of the differences I see is that under the previous superintendent, you know, we've all known that this problem has existed for a long time. It might have been new to Dr. Means, but it was not new to people who have been paying attention in the community. But we had been, under the previous administration, we had been tackling this issue more as an issue of poverty. And now Dr. Means has really put the emphasis on race and he says that poverty is not an excuse, whereas, you know, previously it had been looked at more holistically as a, you know, which
right.
These two things are tied together, obviously, for various reasons, but and the emphasis on test scores now that he has is much different than what people are used to, where the previous superintendent said basically test scores don't matter. I want kids to graduate. I'm worried about graduation rates. But now we're back to focusing on test scores, which has a lot of people scratching their heads going, wait a second, I didn't think test scores mattered. You know, why are we so concerned with test scores?
We're going to have to take a break right now. But before we do go to break, I want to let our listeners know that later in today's program, I'll be speaking one-on-one with Dr. Lakeisha Gant, school board president. Coming up in our panel discussion, Georgia gets even more national attention with two U.S. Senate races on the ballot in 2020. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
All Things Considered has been there through controversial wars.
Thousands of young people came to Washington.
National disasters.
Challenger, go with throttle up.
The explosion in the clear blue Florida sky.
And breakthrough moments.
Just let it sink in. An African-American president of the United States of America.
4 decades of bringing you the news on All Things Considered every afternoon.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters on WUGA. I'm Alexia Ridley with our panel of commentators, Blake Aud, Gwen O'Looney, and Lee Shearer. So Georgia's U.S. Senator Johnny Isakson is retiring, meaning that Georgia will have 2 U.S. Senate races on the ballot in 2020. So since the race for Isakson's seat is going to be a special election, that's going to work differently than the race for David Perdue's seat, no primary, for example. How does the special election work?
Special election works that they just, all the people get their name on the ballot and there's a vote in November. And of course, under Georgia law, they have to get 50%. So there'll probably be a runoff. But I kind of like that. I think it's a positive thing because, you know, we really find out who's the preferred out of all the candidates and who's the second and go with that. So party does kind of disappear in that situation.
Doesn't it favor Republicans, you think, because of Republicans' tendency to turn out more in runoffs?
Now that's true. The runoff always has in our state. That's a good point, Lee.
Well, it's called a jungle primary, and that's the way they do it in Louisiana and in California. And it is kind of interesting because if you look at a state like Louisiana, a lot of times they might get 2 Republicans, and in a state like California, a lot of times they might get 2 Democrats. Because it might lean so far one way to the other, you might actually see 2 people from the same party be the top 2 in a runoff, which I think is kind of interesting. And I think it tends to push people towards the middle, whereas you usually have people running to the extremes on either side in a primary, a partisan primary. I think doing it this way, people really have to run more towards the center. So it's a different kind of campaign.
In the meantime, there's all sorts of speculation about who Governor Brian Kemp may appoint in the interim. Will it be a placeholder? The name Sonny Perdue has come up, which would give Georgia 2 senators named Perdue.
That is not good. I just don't see that happening.
I don't either.
And on the other hand, he may pick some political ally, some up-and-rising person who might have a good chance to win the election.
I would put my money on probably Doug Collins, who's a congressman from Gainesville, who is
one of the most conservative people in the state.
He represents a very conservative district, and he is he's a rising star because he is the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, which has been involved with investigating the president quite a bit. He's been a thorn in the Democrat side and on TV a lot. So
his seat will remain safely in Republican hands.
It will. It's one of the most Republican districts in the country. I think the other likely option would probably be the Attorney General, Chris Carr, who's been who's very close to Johnny Isakson. And
Do you think he wants to run another race?
Well, I don't.
He can't keep his wife as his chief staff.
It's certainly a promotion. But I have a hard time believing that Johnny Isakson would resign without some kind of assurances that he would have input into.
He loves Chris Carr.
Take his
You're
place.
Right.
Well, do we know that he's not, in essence, forced to resign because his health situation is as grave as it is?
His health situation has been grave a really long time.
It has.
He knew before he was reelected that he was in bad shape and that he should have retired before then.
I was surprised that he ran again three years ago. But I haven't seen him in a while, but the last time I saw him, he did not look like he was in
good
shape
all.
Physically at all.
Yeah. His staff has been running his office. I mean, he's made very few appearances for those years.
I haven't seen him in so long.
Yeah, right.
Have you guys heard of any potential candidates getting into this race on either the Republican or Democratic side?
I heard lots of Republican names, but I haven't heard any Democrats.
Nothing solid. I mean, a lot of speculation. You know, people are talking about Michelle Nunn, Jason Carter, who both ran in 2014.
John Barrow and Michael Thurman. I'll tell you, y'all,
I have been
a Michael Thurman fan for a long time.
His name perennially comes up. I mean, yeah. He's been mentioned in connection with David Perdue as well, but he's running for Supreme Court.
And Barrow is he would be a great judge. He would be a good judge, you know. It's just like the presidential right now. We've got to wait to see who comes out with the right, you know, money, the right support, and we need a good candidate. We cannot afford another John Ossoff, who was just a waste of our energy.
Well, he's another name who comes up too.
I know that, but that's a mistake.
He was a terrible candidate.
Let's move on to the animal shelter. As we were talking about this week's show, I know, Lee, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the Athens-Clarke County Animal Shelter. And there's been a lot of consternation on social media about the shelter lately. Can you fill us in on what's going on?
Well, back in July, the shelter euthanized, I think, 31 cats because of a disease definition, feline, was it?
Leukopenia.
Yeah.
That turned out to be wrong. That outraged the animal rights folks. The county announced that it was going to make some changes in operations, which has not remotely satisfied animal rights advocates who point to recommendations that outside agencies have made some time ago, which have not been followed. And now this week we get the news that the dog part of the animal shelter is quarantined after the cat part has reopened after being 2 weeks closed for disinfection there.
Fortunately, only 3 puppies have been put down, and they came in from an outside litter of 6. The remaining three seem fine.
The allegation is that they waited too long. You know, they vaccinated these puppies when they came in, but then when they started to appear ill, or at least one of them did, they didn't immediately take action. They waited at least a day before. So volunteers and people were, which people can carry the parvovirus, it doesn't make them sick, but you know, all these volunteers that were at the shelter, they were exposed to the parvovirus, and then they went back and they played with their own dogs or at their vet clinic and treated other people's pets. So, you know, there was the potential for it to be spread to all kinds of different places.
And after the first incident, the county official said they had no protocol for dealing with that situation. And I wonder, sounds like the same thing is true here.
It sounds like they need protocols for all of these things to protect themselves, their volunteers. And one of the things you didn't mention, Lee, nicely, was that the necropsies showed that the cats did not have the disease. And so, but the puppies there... And so obviously we need to be testing before we're euthanizing. That might be part of the process.
Well, they tested one of the cats, and it came up a light positive, but that was because the cat had recently been vaccinated.
Right.
And then they sent off, they euthanized a couple of the cats and sent them off to have the necropsy done, but they didn't wait for the results to come back in before they euthanized the other 40 cats.
One really compelling part of this whole narrative to me is why here in the South are we exporting dogs and cats from shelters to the North? I mean, is it because we're so slack about not having wild cats and dogs out there reproducing.
Their strays in the die world. Off in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our strays
so,
don't.
So they're just there. It's not that they're better in animal keeping their animals spayed and neutered. And
no, it's that they have weather conditions that help them in the winter. You know, I tell you, this is really a. It's as when I was mayor, we improved the shelter and did all of these things. But the reality was that it takes a huge amount of resources to handle every single animal that comes in. And we live in a community, unfortunately, that's very, very transient. And a lot of that transience is from youth. Youth who have animals maybe at home or find a stray or whatever, and then desert that stray. And so we really do have more of a problem than most communities. And to allocate the resources to do it exceptionally well is very hard.
Now, I spoke so decisively on that, but that is one of the reasons why I've heard up north the animals do tend to die out in the winter where it's ours.
You're from Michigan. You should know.
Right. So. via Savannah. But we are out of time. We will have to leave it there. My thanks to our panel of commentators, Blake Odd from Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald.